To the sixth case, the United States versus Waller. Mr. Marsh.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Mr. Vaughn. My client, Marlon Wallace, entered a plea of guilty to 7 counts of mail fraud. 2 of the counts for which he was convicted occurred in April of 2002. In May of 2002, postal inspectors had some conversations with Mr. Wallace, which led to his settling some claims by vendors and also signing the document which is included in both briefs known as the Statement of Voluntary Discontinuance. The other 5 counts which Mr. Wallace pled guilty to were subsequent to that agreement. At the sentencing hearing pursuant to Mr. Wallace's guilty plea, the only issue was whether the conversations with the postal inspectors and Mr. Wallace's signing of the, quote, Statement of Voluntary Discontinuance justified the court in awarding a 2-level enhancement of his sentence pursuant to 2B1.1B7C. I suggest to the court that the basic issue before the court today is whether the court is going to enforce the words of the guidelines or whether the court's going to look at the perceived purpose of that guideline. I suggest that the district court pretty much ignored the words of that guideline enhancement, but rather looked at what was perceived by the district court to be the purpose of that enhancement, and concluded that even though this Statement of Voluntary Discontinuance does not satisfy the words of the guidelines, it's sort of what the Sentencing Commission was trying to get at, and therefore the 2 levels applies. I suggest to the court that the guidelines were first mandated by the Congress and then adopted by the Sentencing Commission to provide a code form of sentencing for the court, and the words are very important, and the words should be followed. And if the words aren't followed, then the purpose of the guidelines, which is to provide consistency and proportionality in sentencing, is lost. Here the words are common words to all lawyers. There are 2 sets of words. There has to be an order, injunction, decree, or a process, and I suggest that there were none of those here, and it has to be either administrative or judicial. I suggest to the court that a warning by law enforcement officers that if the person doesn't quit doing what they're doing, they're going to be in big trouble does not constitute an administrative process. It clearly isn't an order, an injunction, or a decree, and is clearly not judicial. The only way it could possibly be fitted into those words is if it's an administrative process. This is not an administrative process. It was a law enforcement officer having a conversation with a potential defendant and resulted in this statement signed by Mr. Wallace, not signed by the law enforcement agents, not signed by anybody from the Postal Service. There was no commitment from the agency as to what would happen or wouldn't happen if he did or didn't sign the agreement.
Mr. Marsh, you waived your right to appeal a sentence of less than 24 months, and so district court sentenced Mr. Wallace to 24 months plus 1 day. Are we arguing about
one day
here?
No.
I mean, how much would the sentence change without the enhancement?
The guideline range would be 2 levels lower, which I believe would be 6 months difference on each end of the sentence. I believe the range here, I know the range here was 24 to 30 months. If the 2 levels are not added, I believe it would be 18 to 24 months. So Mr. Wallace, without these 2 levels, could receive a sentence of 18 months.
Or 24.
He could receive 24. That's true.
He could save a day.
He could save a day. Your Honor, I suggest that this, if this decision of the district court is upheld, that it would be a significant extension of where the law is in this jurisdiction under the Mantis case, which is the only case that's close to on point here. In Mantis, there was a clear administrative order. There was a seizure order by the Illinois Department of Agriculture seizing certain property, and the defendant violated that seizure order. If this decision by the district court is upheld, it would be tantamount to any warning from a law enforcement officer to a defendant to quit doing certain activities, which is ignored by the defendant, could result in this two-level enhancement. There's no question about what the purpose of this guideline, as the district court found, was to punish aggravated criminal intent, but I would suggest that it was more specific than that and was directed at conduct which is tantamount to a contempt. It's a contempt kind of violation. I suggest to the court that if you read the words of this very straightforward guideline and apply those words, that this enhancement does not apply to Mr. Wallace and his statement of voluntary discontinuance, and the judgment should be vacated and the matter remanded to the district court for resentencing.
Thank you, Mr. Marsh. Mr. Vaughn.
Good morning. My name is Joe Vaughn. I'm the Assistant United States Attorney who prosecuted Mr. Wallace in the court below. And it's the government's position that the district court correctly increased Mr. Wallace's offense level 2 levels for having violated the statement of voluntary discontinuance.
But if the statement is unilateral, how do we characterize it as an agreement? It would seem to require something more than the word agree. He could have written the same thing in his diary, for example. It seems like a stretch.
Well, I think what we're looking at here is not only do we have to look at the statement of voluntary discontinuance with the language of I agree, we also need to look at the accompanying representations that were made by Inspector Petrie, which surround the execution of the document itself. And those representations were that this statement of voluntary discontinuance is going to be a part of the resolution of the fraud perpetrated on Vibes Technologies, for which Mr. Wallace was not going to be prosecuted. Mr. Wallace agrees, I'm not going to do that kind of conduct anymore, and Inspector Petrie also tells him, you understand that if you go out and you violate this, the terms of the voluntary discontinuance, you will be prosecuted for any new fraudulent conduct and any and the conduct underlying the fraud on Vibes Technologies. And I think the Mantis case really hones in on your question there, which Judges Bauer and Flom were on the panel that heard that. And the administrative order in that case was nothing more than a red tag, which was affixed to the cooler containing the rotten meat.
Mm-hmm.
The effect of the opinion is that red tag seized the cooler and it barred Mr. Mantis from selling the contents of the cooler. Here, not only do we have a directive to Mr. Wallace of you cannot engage in certain conduct, you have Mr. Wallace executing a document saying, I agree that I cannot do that.
Well, what did it mean to resolve the matter with Vibes? Was Vibes satisfied with the result? Was it bound to the result as it would be in, you know, in a settlement?
My understanding of the chronology with Vibes was that Inspector Petrie was contacted by a representative of the corporation who stated that Vibes had been defrauded by a Myron Wallace. And I think that there were Vibes at that point, I think, not sure of exactly what their loss was. They had sent out, I think, $31,500 in equipment. Inspector Petrie is able to locate Mr. Wallace and talks to Mr. Wallace and said that the company's primary interest is either getting their money back or getting their product back, and that Mr. Wallace can avoid a criminal prosecution by making Vibes whole or as whole as he can. The equipment, or at least a portion of that equipment, is returned to Vibes through Inspector Petrie. Vibes determines that their loss is still at $15,000. But they will accept a payment of $8,000 and they will eat the $7,000 balance. Vibes was not involved in the statement, the executing the statement of voluntary discontinuance. That was something that was kind of put into the mix by Inspector Petrie. I believe the record would show as a step to trying to make sure this type of conduct did not happen again.
I still have a problem, and my problem really is, how was it resolved if no one is bound by the statement as they would be with a settlement? Or are they bound?
I think I can answer your question on, I think there's kind of three answers here on three different ranges. First of all, legally, could the government come back on Mr. Wallace based on this statement? I suppose on a purely technical level, the postal inspector cannot bind the authority of the people to pursue Mr. Wallace.
Well, so Jack, the court said he's in separate files, which means that he's guilty of misprision of treason, misprision of felony, and he's ought to be prosecuted himself. He can't peddle off. He's not right to settle cases.
That would be correct. Now, as a practical matter, though, I suppose as a prosecutor, if this case was to be presented, and Inspector Petrie was to come in and say, we want you to prosecute Mr. Wallace for defrauding
the government. I promise not to.
Right.
And then you'd say, okay, I'm not going to do it because I think you're a bum, but that doesn't recruit
right.
You.
Yeah. On a purely technical level, yeah, let's assume that the crime is a little more serious here than $15,000 worth of telecommunications.
No. Let's keep to the facts,
okay. If
you don't mind.
That's perfectly fine. And then also as a practical matter, I suppose, within the mechanics of how the cases would come into a prosecutor's office, had Mr. Wallace not violated this statement involving the statement of voluntary discontinuance, would the government ever have found out about that? We never would have known that this matter existed because Vibes was happy. Mr. Wallace had abided by the terms of an agreement, and there would have been nothing to have referred to the prosecutor's office.
I'm so worried about opening up Pandora's box here.
Well, I think that the gist of the defense argument is that they recognize the precedent of Mantis, which is an informal process involving one of negotiation or inspection, whatever it may be, is sufficient. In an informal decree in the form of whether it's a red seizure tag or something is sufficient, but that the statement of voluntary discontinuance here coupled with the representations of the inspector is too informal.
Yeah.
And I guess that's really kind of gets to the bottom line on why we're
well,
here.
Well, there's also the element of the time period. There's a temporal quality here, is there not, of many months of negotiation.
That's correct.
It's like a statement after lunch, and then I hereby agree. There is a backdrop to this process.
That is correct, several months at least, before it's executed.
Out of vital curiosity, the record doesn't show this. Do they know I entered into such sort of an arrangement with the guy signing up and says, I'll cut it out?
This is the first one of these I've ever seen.
Me too. I wonder whether it floated around regularly.
Now, this is not on the record, but in conversations with the inspectors, they did tell me that it's something that they utilize. It's regarded as an administrative civil process. The record shows that they are reviewed by counsel within the inspection service. Mm-hmm. I have never seen one of these.
Yeah, I think this is, for me, it's a very difficult just a difficult case, and it's just a shame that this guy can't behave.
After agreeing that he would,
because it makes it a harder case.
Some people just cannot be reformed.
You can tell him I said he didn't behave. I mean, he had such a chance, didn't he?
He had quite a few, I would say.
Yeah.
Well, the judge suggested, I think it's hard to work up a lot of sympathy for him, but I mean, I'm just modestly curious as to whether or not the message should be delivered to the agencies. It can't go into these sort of things. I mean, you can make a decision you're not going to do anything and then shut up about it. It's one thing. But then to expect to enforce it later on, I mean, it's a little difficult to accept. And that's the point being made by your opponent, of course.
And yet, I would imagine that in many cases, you know, people learn their lessons, and this is so helpful to society in general, and certainly to the court.
Yeah, it helped out an impulse of decency in law enforcement agencies. Police officers have an enormous amount of discretion as to whether they're going to arrest you, even if you violated the traffic laws.
That's correct.
But they don't later on come back and say, okay, you violated, now you're going to get nailed for that one, too. I mean, it's over and done with.
And I think, once again, see, my time is just about up, but I think if we were relying simply upon an oral statement or a piece of paper that was given to Mr. Wallace saying, you can't do this anymore, cut it out, that would be one thing. But here where there are the conversations with the inspector about what this document curtailed and his execution of that document, I think places this in a little more formal setting than the informal decree found to be sufficient in Mantis.
Thank you, Mr. Vaughn.
Thank you.
Ms. Marsh.
Just 2 points, if I could, Your Honors, in rebuttal. Judge, if all of our clients behaved, I'd be out of a job. Quickly, Mr. Vaughn, if I'd be out of a job.
That's okay.
But I think you touched indirectly on an important point, and that is this isn't a sympathetic defendant. This isn't anybody that I could stand up and cry. He was caught, and he feels bad and all the rest, because he did have clear warning. But that's a temptation to apply a guideline that doesn't really apply. And there are other ways of dealing with that. There was a range of 24 to 30 months. Something higher in the range would certainly have been appropriate to deal with this prior warning. A departure might have been appropriate to deal with this prior warning. But when the courts deal with maybe idiosyncratic defendants by applying guidelines that don't apply, we lose the predictability of the guidelines. Second point simply is the distinction between this case and the Mantis case is not in the formality or lack thereof of the process. In the Mantis case, the quote red tag was an administrative seizure. That property was the property of the state of Illinois until it was otherwise disposed of. So in violating that red tag, the person subjected themselves to an enhanced penalty in the nature of a contempt. There isn't anything even remotely close to that in this case. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Marsh. Thank you, Mr. Vaughn. The case is taken under advisement. The court will stand in recess.